G'day, I'm Linda Ross and welcome to the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast. You know, sometimes I think there's a kindness deficit in society these days. Everybody's so concerned with themselves and their lot in life, and we're not really looking out for each other as much as I think we used to back in the day. Someone who's taking care of a whole lot of people is my next guest. She's just the most extraordinary therapeutic horticulturist. She works in a little place called The Secret Garden and Nursery in Richmond. Day in, day out, she works so hard as a therapeutic horticulturist, giving those less able jobs in propagation of plants to sell in the little nursery. It's a not-for-profit organisation, and it's bloody hard work. It's Marion Farrer. She's incredible. She's one of those girls that really is at the coalface of therapeutic horticulture. And, you know, it's these sorts of stories that I want to shine a light on in this podcast.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that sea salt is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that sea salt reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, sea salt your plants.
Don't forget the sea salt.
G'day, Marion.
Hello, Linda. How are you today?
I'm great, darling. How are you?
Good, thank you. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here and wander around where I've wanted to come for ages. So I feel terrible that I haven't been here sooner. Because you have these really dynamic fates and shows, usually in spring, the fair, which is coming up soon. And there's another one in autumn, isn't there?
Yes.
What are they meant to do, the fairs?
So we're not government funded here, so we have to do our own fundraising. So we have three events actually. We've got the Autumn Fair, the Spring Fair, and the Collector's Plant Fair.
Of course, how could we forget that one? And that's, I suppose, where we started, we met at Collector's Plant Fair at the Clarendon Racecourse many years ago. And you guys are such a dynamic team. You always friendly, smiley faces with the most amazing collection of plants. And I think people really, you're a huge draw card at the Collector's Plant Fair. Right. People just buzz straight into you, I think. A, your display always looks amazing. Full of like salvias and ornamental grasses, wonderful bee hotels that I bought last year, and bees buzzed into it straight away. And I think just it's got such dynamic quality that people just are drawn to you guys in that one spot. And I think people come year after year to find you. I suppose it's that social aspect that the Secret Gardens is all about. I mean, that's the core philosophy of what you do. Can you tell me a little bit about the core philosophy of the Secret Garden and Nursery?
Right, well, our main focus is providing therapeutic horticulture to people of all abilities. We get such a diverse range of people coming through this garden, up to about 200 people a week. And that includes our amazing group of volunteers, and we get disabled people coming. Oh, we've got Parkley inmates and just all participants from other organisations.
I met some this morning.
Yes.
They're all really happy to be here.
Yeah.
It's part of, I suppose, their social...
It's a great social atmosphere.
Atmosphere, somewhere they can come with their friends and just relax. I think they find it really...
Yeah, and it's a real nurturing environment here. Yeah, you just see so many happy faces, and people can get involved in all the activities here, like in the potting shed. That's a real hub of activity. Yeah, people just love potting plants. It's amazing.
There's nothing quite like sitting down potting plants and having a good old natter.
Yeah,
I think that's what the girls are doing this morning.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's a really productive pursuit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're selling, well, you know, we've got 8 months to Collector's Plant Fair now, and you're potting those little salvia seedlings all ready to go.
Yeah, that's right. Yep,
so there's a big timeline, isn't there?
Yeah, and people can come here, and if they choose not to partake in any activities, there's beautiful spaces that they can just enjoy, walk around, visit the farmyard animals. Yeah, so there's something here for everybody.
Well, there seems to be quite a busy day today with lots of volunteers in all nooks and crannies, right over the garden, some weeding, some potting up, some taking cuttings for fairs coming up. So how do you sort of strategically work out who's doing what?
I guess we just have to work on priorities, and because our main priority at the moment is the spring fair on the 8th of September, so we've got to make the place look beautiful. It always looks beautiful, but it's kind of like tidying up around the edges, you know, when you're expecting visitors.
I hate the even thought of it. I think how much weeding would need to be done.
And getting all our stock in order, all our plants, making them look beautiful, pricing and labelling. We also go out and seek donations of plants, so we've got some wonderful people that help us out, like Valley View Nursery, have just given us some beautiful azaleas. The Green Gallery have been
Jeremy,
terrific.
God love him.
I've yet to approach Jeremy.
Well, Jeremy, if you're listening. So it's good to have those sort of proper, you know, proper small business nurseries donating stock for this nursery for funding, because it's so absolutely integral. So tell me more about how you are funded.
Main way we make our money is through the sale of the plants and running all the different programs here. So the disability organisations, so we've got, it's not just the gardening that they can access here, we've got Mate Shed, so it's a woodworking program. The guys can come and make the beautiful bee hotels. We've also got candle making here on site. And the gardening, so we've got three or four different programs. We also run an animal therapy program here too.
What does that involve?
Well, they come along, and lovely Sonia, who you met, she'll take the groups around to visit the different animals and talk about what they need. They will give them food and water.
So I saw guinea pigs. I saw the unicorn sheep.
Goat.
Typical gardener. I saw some lovely sheep, a black faced sheep. And then, of course, you've got the Riding for the Disabled next door, which is really awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a CEO of Northwest Disability Services, Deborah. She's got a pretty amazing vision for the gardens, doesn't she?
Yeah, she envisioned this whole site. So our old garden had been around, the secret garden's been around for about 30 years, and the university kindly leased us a beautiful old site, and we had to move from there. So when Northwest Disabilities took over the secret garden, the university said to them that we would be having to move out because they needed the land back. Yeah, so they showed us this new site, which is an old horse stud on the university, and it was all just nothing here, just a few horse stables and the Riding for Disabled area next door. So it was all a big horse stud. And Deborah just had this amazing vision of the whole place, because she, that was one of her goals, was to build a therapy garden at a site, and this just happened to, you know, come true for her.
Well, the structures and the frameworks and the buildings and the there's so many buildings here housing a completely different collections of plants, and some of the a lot of those big buildings have are built of rammed earth. So who built those?
Well, again, one of our amazing volunteers is he's an architect and earth builder. His name's Ray Trappell. And he's just amazing. Him, and he's always had a crew of volunteers helping him. He's donated so much of his time to building the beautiful earth buildings here.
Yeah, they've got a really great ochre-y, earthy quality about them. They feel like part of the landscape.
And they're quite warm, you know. They're very, very...
Yeah, passive solar, I suppose. Yeah, terrific. Yeah. So what appealed to you about working here at Secret Gardens?
I've been here for 15 years. After doing my horticulture course, I had a number of different jobs in nurseries, and I always felt like I wanted something more. When I saw the job being advertised for someone with experience with disabilities and horticulture, well, I didn't have the disability experience, but I just felt that was something that I really wanted to do, and I managed to get a job here, and it's been challenging in a lot of ways, but it's so satisfying. Just seeing the joy that gardening and all the animals bring to the people.
So you are at the coalface of therapeutic horticulture. There's not many people doing this. There's a lot of people who are really seeing the opportunities in this field.
Mm-hmm.
What differences do you think a garden like this makes to the people who come and volunteer here? Do you see an immediate change in their outlook? I mean, I saw a lot of happy kids here today volunteering.
Mm.
They feel protected, they feel safe, and they feel probably really responsible for the jobs that they're doing. They feel valued.
Yeah.
That's pretty special to like a take-home sort of thing.
Yeah.
Do you see any big differences with people who are just starting off? Coming to a place like this?
Like if we talk about the participants that come here, you met Kelly,
yep.
Kyle, and there's another young lady that comes, Hannah. It's a bit of a gradual process, but generally as soon as they come here, they just feel relaxed and happy because all of us, we're all pretty relaxed and happy here. Finding out what really they enjoy doing, and they get such a sense of accomplishment. Like, for instance, Kelly, who you met, she's a 30-year-old young lady, and she could barely pot a plant in a big pot when she first started coming here. Now we have her putting in tiny little cuttings, so she works with the propagating ladies. She can tube up the cuttings once they're rooted into little tubes, and she's doing all these fine motor skill things that she has just learnt here.
Kelly says to me this morning that she's been here for 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
She doesn't look like she's going anywhere. She's really enjoys coming out
she
here.
Loves it.
She does, doesn't she? She really looks forward to it. Did she say 4 days a week?
Yes, yeah, that's right. And she'll do all different things when she's here.
She was weeding this morning.
She particularly loves working with some of our volunteers.
Oh, she was in her hi-vis, I thought, very important.
And then you met Kyle, so he's just a joy. He just laughs and he's happy just to work alongside us. He'll go and get wheelbarrow loads of
one in the propagation?
Yes. Yeah.
Kyle. Okay, what are the challenges?
I guess first off is lack of staffing, but then again and finding enough volunteers. So this whole organisation needs volunteers to run it, so that there's three of us staff on a 25-acre site with a retail nursery, beautiful gardens, so just keeping it all maintained.
With often sort of 40 disabled and parklee inmates needing to be, I suppose, managed in some way.
Yeah, so everyone needs to be directed.
Yeah.
So when you get these wonderful volunteers coming in and they all come up and say, what do you want me to do today? And not just them, but we get school students coming. It's the type of job that's never out of your head. You've always got to be planning what are the priorities of the day, who can I match up with this job to do this, but also giving enjoyment to people, not just coming here and working.
And getting something
so
done.
It's finding the right jobs.
And probably matching personalities too a little bit.
Yeah, people can choose to work in a team environment or by themselves. Yeah, so just...
Other challenges? Water.
Water, rabbits, drought.
Frost. All the big ones. It's a massive, challenging avalanche, considering... And foxes. We forgot to put foxes on that list, Marianne.
Yeah. But you just can't ever get it all done. And the main priorities is keeping the plants watered, the animals healthy and fed, and the people.
Yeah. Well, that's the crux, I suppose, isn't it? Mind you, it's nearly September. We had -2 degrees this morning.
Yes.
So there was frost damage. This winter's been a humdinger in terms of frost. What's it got down to?
-4.5 in Richmond here.
Okay, -4.5. We're looking at probably one of the hottest summers on record.
So summer, we have to battle with 45 degrees here.
So it goes from minus basically 5 to 45 degrees. It's a huge swing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then to have the rabbits and the foxes to battle as well. So the boys were out this morning sort of, I suppose, reinforcing fences so the chickens were protected.
And on top of trying to run a nursery, propagating and sorting plants and everything, we also have to care for the people that come here. Very challenging job, but very rewarding as well.
It sounds like you've got your work cut out for you.
And then you've got to prepare for all the events.
Yeah, that's why we need an events manager. So if anyone's listening and wants to volunteer and organise the events for Secret Garden, and I think that would be the best possible way forward, wouldn't it? So they can come and organise that for you. So what kind of plants do you focus on here at Secret Gardens and Nursery?
Well, as I was chatting to you this morning, we're kind of rethinking our whole nursery now, because I think we've got too many lines of things. Our salvias, I think, are becoming a real hit with us. So
you're really known for your salvia collection.
And we grow about 80 different varieties, and they're all suitable to this harsh climate. Also the cottage garden, old-fashioned cottage garden type plants, the ornamental grasses.
When you think about the nursery industry in the last sort of, well, for 30 years, a lot of those big cottage garden nurseries are no more. Mm. So it's really hard to find good salvias, good miscanthus, good grasses in Sydney, because, those wonderful sort of cottage garden nurseries have all disappeared.
And I find it just through my own garden and the Secret Garden, seeing the wildlife that this type of planting brings, the little birds and all sorts of things, all the insects and things like that. I think it's so important to plant diversity, which isn't happening enough these days.
Well, I am a massive fan of salvias for precisely that reason, because some of mine, including Armistead, flower right through the winter, and my lovely little eastern spinebills are very happy, and the bees, obviously, that they can have that foraged nectar right through the deepest, darkest months of winter. Yeah, so they really like that. So I make sure I never prune all of the salvias at once. Yeah, I sort of stagger them so all my little friends, my feathered friends, are happy. Yeah. But salvias are great. And I think a lot of people think, we need, native Australian wildflowers to feed the native bees and birds. But it's really not the case. Mm. Salvias do such a great job because they've got that throated sort of trumpet, I suppose. Yes. A lot of those honey eater birds with the long bills really love to kind of levitate a bit like hummingbirds and drink.
Yeah. And it's great just mixing all the plants together, and also we've got a small selection of natives and succulents with a beautiful succulent that we've just gotten in this morning.
That I pinched one off straight away. Yeah, Echeveria Blue Waves. Mm-hmm. Quite a stunner. And what would you say? That 30 inches or 20 inches?
The size of dinner plates they are.
Gigantic. Amazing. And absolutely. I saw a whole ute load of them rock in. Absolutely gorgeous. So, so you're broadening, I suppose you're narrowing the focus a little bit with the plant material, and those sort of more common lines like hedging plants and everything can kind of go by the wayside, where you really concentrate on plant lines that are easy to propagate.
Yes.
So all of our volunteers are happy doing something, they feel really valued, and then we can sell, and that's all, of course, apart from the potting mix and the pots, that's pretty nifty.
Just more flowers. People love flowers. Flowers and water-wise plants. I think with the way our climate's going we need to focus on very hardy plants.
We're right back in the thick of the drought, aren't we? I was just reading this morning what a good job that salvia Anthony Parker does in dry shade.
Right.
Under trees, dry shade. Who would have thought that a salvia like Anthony Parker would do so well, but it really does. Okay. Like that sort of spot where clivias, really shine. Mm-hmm. But I thought, salvias, there's so many of them. I think I've got a book of salvias. There's 600 salvias.
Oh, yeah, there's
name, tons. Variety. There's tiny little ones, and there's the bigger, kind of more herbaceous ones. But they're just a riot of colour.
Mm-hmm.
Not only for us, they're great in big sort of explosive flower arrangements.
Yes,
but they're also really just great, tough, hardy, full-on flowers in the garden.
I'm amazed with the frost that we had. We did get a lot of frost damage, but you walk through the garden, you're seeing all the little growth coming back of the salvias.
Well, I thought the melianthus were looking pretty damn good too. So we could just maybe confine the plant lines to plants that don't get frost affected.
Yeah.
Salvias, melianthus. We could have the world's biggest collection of melianthus.
They're tough things, aren't they?
They look amazing. They don't look that tough because of those lovely sort of finely cut leaf. I just thought maybe they would get frost damage, but they're looking spectacular.
Yeah, they're amazing.
And then I really do think the the next wave is the ornamental grasses. Mm-hmm. I don't think Sydney people use them enough. Mm. They're huge in the States, massive through Europe, massive in Holland and right through Germany. But we're just not planting broad brushstrokes of ornamental grasses like the miscanthuses and the stipa and the penicetums. Mm. I suppose the non-seeding ones we need to concentrate on, but they're there and they create such bulk and volume and texture and movement that the Sydney people just, I don't think, have got really into.
Yeah, I guess they're a little bit hard to propagate to, especially the ones that you can't grow by seed, because you've got to have enough stock growing to divide them all up.
Yeah, so root division.
That's
root
probably
division.
Why also they're a bit hard to come by.
Oh, it's the next wave. Where did the plants come from? Did I hear that some of them come from your garden?
Oh, yeah. Over the years I've built up a garden a bit similar to this one. Probably not as pretty because I'm always here. But yeah, so, and the frost up at Currajong doesn't get as bad as what it does in Richmond. So at the moment I'm getting a lot of cutting material from home. Also, our wonderful volunteers bring in cuttings from their gardens, so often I'll give them a plant. I say, here, go and plant that in your garden so I can get cuttings off.
You know, you've given me a great idea. Like, so many just home gardeners have plant material that can be propagated. Mm. You've got to get it, I suppose, in a certain time frame for it to be ready to be propagated.
Yeah.
But that's something that is untapped. You know, we could sort of put... Like, I had so much salvia that I just composted.
Oh, right,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
when I cut everything back. I mean, some of those salvias are also a little bit suckering, I find.
Mm.
So I'm often sort of removing suckers
that
could easily be propagated.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe that's something that we could get gardeners to do.
Yeah, and we get wonderful donations too from some of our customers. Like, yeah, people are bringing cuttings. You know, just a lovely man came in with a ute load of beautiful succulents and he said, oh, my wife has just dug these out of the garden here, would you like them? So we gladly take any donations like that here too.
What a ripper. Look, I am absolutely thrilled that you've been able to tear yourself away from all of your activities and all of those smiling faces out there. That they're just so happy. It's a pleasure to walk around and hear them so happy in what they're doing and such a wonderful, safe environment that you've created here. So thank you so much for your time and thank you so much for that work that you do, Marianne.
Oh,
I think you're amazing.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks very much for coming.
It's a pleasure. I'll see you at Collectors.
Yes, see you there.
For more information, you can just head to the website. Go on to Facebook, to the Garden Clinic, if you've got any questions for me at all. Lovely to keep in touch. And on Instagram too. The Garden Clinic aims to give you lots of practical information to keep your gardening and to create that garden of your dreams. I'm Linda Ross. I'm a landscape architect who gardens in a little place on the Central Coast called Frog Hollow. If you like what you hear, please give me a 5-star rating on iTunes. It really helps me get new gardeners to find me here on the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast. And again, if you've got a question, head over to our Facebook page, The Garden Clinic, and we'll answer it for you. Thanks for joining me today. Have a happy day in the garden and go safely.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.